All right. Hello, everybody. it's good to see you all. We are in retreat here in La Vida this week. In fact, gosh, almost 25% of the people on the screen are physically in La Vida right now. Everybody that's in La Vida, wave. See, look at all those people waving. Oh, my goodness. And we've been having a really nice time, very purposeful. I mean, I told them it's great that they're having fun, but I wanted to make sure it was purposeful, and it was. It is so far. So today was the end of our second day of the self-inquiry retreat here in La Vida. As a result, I may not read 100% of your forum post this week. I'm doing the best I can. But, you know, leading a retreat and teaching at night and trying to catch up on email and read the form, as you guys can imagine. Oh, and sleep. I get to sleep too. As you guys can imagine, it's a lot. So if I don't get to 100% of your journal entries this week, please let me know. I have another thing I'd like to ask, and everybody, if this is true for, please wave. Who doesn't have a roof on their house? Yeah, Abigail doesn't have a roof on her house, or unless it's got replaced already. Abigail, you want to take the mic and tell us why you don't have a roof on your house?
I'll do that.
Wait, she's still muted. Let's get, there you go. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Acts of nature.
Was it a tornado?
Yeah, the tornadoes. There's been an unbelievable number of tornadoes in Louisiana, and there were 8. That came through at one time, like a whole string. And then this is actually a tornado that was not recorded. It's in a real rural parish. We have parishes instead of counties. And so it wasn't actually even recorded. But we have several friends whose houses were destroyed. So we know that it really happened. Do we know it really happened? There's rain and mud on the floor, so it must have really happened. So yeah. So anyway, I left there and I'm in Idaho now because my new motto is just drive away, like put a tarp over it. Like come back when you're more settled and you can deal with it better. So that's my story. Thank you.
Well, we're happy to have you here with us, Abigail. I love it when things like that happen in people's lives and they use it to stick with the spiritual path, right? Not that I love it when things like that happen, but it's more the emphasis on the second part. And they use it to stick with the spiritual path rather than having that be the catalyst for forgetting about the spiritual path. So we're happy to have you here with us, Abigail. Does anybody have anything they would like to share before I begin sharing? Okay. All looks quiet on the Western Front, as they say. So let me have a peek. I wanted us to start by looking at quotes 405, 406, and 407 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. So let's grab our books. And I'm just going to read these three quotes right in a row. Quote number 405, be not deluded, abandon false perception, and behold the truth. Be not deluded, abandon false perception, and behold the truth. All right, quote number 406. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, the appearance of the world illusion ceases. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, the appearance of the world illusion ceases. And then 407, caught up in his own conditioning, whatever the person sees, he thinks that to be real and gets deluded. And on account of the intensity of the conditioning and the fancy, he discards his own nature and perceives only the world illusion. Again, caught up in his own conditioning, whatever the person sees, He thinks that to be real and gets deluded. And on account of the intensity of the conditioning and the fancy, he discards his own nature and perceives only the world illusion. So just kind of a summary of the three quotes: be not deluded, abandon false perception, and behold the truth. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, the appearance of the world illusion ceases. Caught up in his own conditioning, whatever the person sees, he thinks that to be real and gets deluded. So what I want to ask you guys about these quotes is, how can we live these quotes? All right, Tony.
One example for myself that I've had recently, I spent an entire week in one house with 22 family members, and it was quite an experience. I have to be very honest, I was very engaged in what was happening in the house and the conversation. I was enjoying myself at the beach, and I didn't do my normal practice of contemplation and meditation daily. I did snippets of it, but it wasn't, I was very distracted, but I was practicing in the moments of when I was around people, trying to maintain my practice at that time. And one of the ways in which you said you practice this, or at least I practice it, at the very end of the vacation, my mother-in-law had summoned me to her room, and she felt that I was not paying enough attention to her, and that she felt like I was pushing her aside, and like I was making no room for her in my life. And I noticed the physical changes in my body as she was talking, because I could sense that the mind wanted to get defensive, and it wanted to protect itself and to, you know, just give feedback of excuses of why, or just explaining. And I saw that, and then I just kind of relaxed into letting that be there and pass, and just kind of feeling more compassion for her, because it seemed like she felt like a victim. And I can see that. And the love in my heart just kind of, it just opened for her. And I'd never really experienced it like that with her before. And so that was a practice that I had used to be centered and to not allow the mind to dictate the responses. And it was very, very cool. And it was a very healing moment for me, and I believe for her too. So that was one way that I feel like I was able to practice that particular quote. It's just being centered and still and non-reactive.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for taking your practices seriously. I really appreciate that. Who else would like to share how we can live these three quotes? Be not deluded, abandon the movements of mind. If you believe your own conditioning, you are deluded. That's kind of a summary. Ron?
Yeah, for me, I think it wasn't as specific as Tony just talked about. It's for me, focusing my believing attention just on what's happening in the moment, because to me that is that my mind is not working. Then my mind really is at rest. I'm not really thinking anything. I'm being. I'm focusing on being right there, whatever is happening, and sensing only that. as opposed to my typical human conditioning of thinking about this, thinking about that, not really being centered in the moment. So for me, that's kind of been my practice the last few days.
Thank you, Ron. You're sitting on the back porch, are you?
I am. That's it's very nice out this evening.
That's nice. Does anyone else want to share? George.
Hi, and thank you, Tony. That was such a great example there. The Bible says be in the world, but not of the world, something to that effect. Several months ago, I really felt guided to step away from busyness. One example that I've shared before is I've traded in the stock market for years and years and years. And before we went on the Italy trip, I closed out all my positions. And I will wait for guidance as to whether I will ever trade again. That was something that took almost daily attention. And we all have changes in our life. You know, my wife just retired last month, so that's a big change. You know, we're spending a lot of time together. It doesn't mean that I can withdraw from the world, but just being more mindful and focusing on going inward and looking at things from an inward perspective. So that's all.
Yeah, and you and your wife weren't even always in the same state, right? And now you're together, living together.
That's right. Yeah, she was in Illinois and I was in Tennessee. So now then she can really keep an eye on me.
Yeah, we've got to meet his wife. She went with us to Italy and she's a lot of fun. But it is a change when you are kind of used to being alone and you know, doing things your way, right? And then your spouse is with you all the time. It's a big change. I think that comment you made about being in the world but not of the world, I think that's a perfect expression of how we can practice these quotes. You know, it's really that, finding a way to be in the world but not of the world. In fact, today at the retreat, we went to a place for kind of a refreshment after being outside for a long time. And we contemplated a Ramana Maharshi quote about staying with the I, or what we would call the true self or awareness, and not allowing your mind to go on a tangent, not allowing your attention to go on a tangent or leave the true self. And so what we did was we practiced. I had a temporary rule, no spiritual talk at all. We're going to sit here and have a social conversation. But try to stay with the I while you're having a social conversation. And there are eight of us around the table. And I think the conversation started about airplane flights and I don't know where all it went. At some point, there were a couple conversations actually happening at the table. You could see it truly broke into that social realm. And then I hit pause. I said, okay, pause. Okay, how's everybody doing? Staying with the I. And I think Mark gave a really good answer. He said about 25%. And I said, that's pretty good, actually, to be able to stay with it. 25% in a social conversation is pretty good. But I also asked everyone, yesterday we sat by the river for half an hour without talking and focused on awareness. And then today we were attempting to focus on awareness while in a social conversation. And I asked everyone which was easier. Can you guys guess which was easier? Go ahead, Don.
Oh, I would assume the one by the lake.
Yeah, the river. The river was much easier. Just sitting there with nature was much easier. So this living in the world but not of the world, right? Staying focused on awareness and not just going into our conditioning and, you know, and our believing takes a lot of practice. So practice. You know, so practice and just, you just have to want to do it. You have to want to stay inwardly focused rather than being outwardly focused. And again, as Francine described today, when I was asking people, how do we do this? You know, Francine, pardon me if I paraphrase you and don't get it exactly right, but the gist of the idea was you have to keep some of the attention in the background, right? I mean, obviously, if you're in the world, you're talking to people, you're doing a job, you know, there's also going to be attention that's out, but keep some of the attention towards the background. You know, remain aware of what you are. Remain aware of your intuition. Just remain aware back this way too. So start practicing that. Start practicing being in the world but not of the world with people, right? It's easy to do with plants. And practice with plants too. I think they're great, but with people. Anybody else have anything they want to say? Yes, Don.
I just have a question, because I know Michael Langford recently in Gentle Healing Year One, he was talking about how you don't, when you're practicing awareness, watching awareness, you don't focus outward in the world, because like he uses that whole, you know, you might put shaving cream and stuff on your toothbrush. Yeah. And so that's why he created the Loving All method to help us to engage with the world in such a way that we don't have to do. So if you could just explain the difference.
Sure, I absolutely can explain.
And then what he recommends.
Yeah, I absolutely can explain that. First of all, in order to practice the Loving All method, some of your attention is going to have to be within. Because otherwise, when the mind said, I hate this, you would just say, I hate this. You know what I mean? Right? So when you're practicing the Loving All method, some of your attention is within. Some of your attention is remembering your purpose. You are paying attention to yourself. You are discerning what the mind is doing and which thoughts you want to listen to and which thoughts you want to let go of. That's really the amount of inwardness we're talking about. Now, when Michael Langford is talking about the inwardness as comparison, the meditation inwardness, it's a much deeper inwardness, right? And you can't pay attention to that degree inwardly while you have to be in the outer world. In fact, as you get better and better at meditation, the inward attention is so deep that there could be no awareness of the world, no awareness of the body at all. And obviously, he's not recommending that, you know. So it's kind of the difference between taking all of your attention and pointed inward and just keeping some of your attention pointed inward so that you're remaining aware. Does that answer the question? Perfect. Good. Anything else on this? All right, then. Let's see what I had next. Well, as Don mentioned, I am interviewing Dr. Jeffrey Martin on Sunday night of this week at 7:30 Eastern Time. And so what I have done is I've read his book, you know, because that's what you do when you interview somebody. So you know what to ask them. And after I read his first book, I went to a second book, which is really more like a pamphlet. And in this second book, he lists the teachings. Now, again, he interviewed thousands of people who are awake to at least some degree, I'm going to say. Interviewed thousands of people who are awake to some degree. And what he did in this pamphlet that I read afterwards was he mentioned the practices that were most helpful to awakening. And I mentioned these briefly the other night, maybe it was during the member meeting, but I thought we might look at them a little more carefully here and notice these practices that seem to be proven to be most helpful to awakening. So the very first practice is awareness-centered practices, directly placing attention on awareness itself. And he said using verbal and nonverbal techniques during individual or group practice. So I think an example of a verbal technique would be self-inquiry. Yeah, you know, like what sees this thought? What's aware of this thought? That kind of thing, right? You're helping to place attention, but you're using a verbal technique to help you. And a nonverbal technique would be, you know, shifting your attention to awareness without having to go through a thought tool first. But I thought it was interesting that the number one practice that he found in his scientific research to be helpful to awakening is the same practice that we stress as the number one practice, right? Staying aware of awareness to whatever degree that you can. Now, his second practice, the second most helpful practice, is direct inquiry, right? Actively digging into the mind, emotions, and sensations, and seeking the truth of oneself. He says this is done by constant attention to what the narrative self, or what we would call the ego, what it feels like, and or actively trying to deconstruct it through ongoing probing or questioning. And starting in year one, gentle healing, we learned some inquiry techniques that would help us deconstruct the mind, or help us see through the mind, might be the way I worded it then. Root cause inquiry, right? We looked at Byron Katie's The Work. We looked at the Choose Again inquiry process. And we looked at the small s self-inquiry process of Inner Ramana. So inquiring into our thoughts and our emotions is the second most helpful practice. The third most helpful practice, mantra-based practices, using specific words or sounds as an object of concentration. They may or may not have a meaning and can be recited aloud or silently. And of course, one of the things that we have practiced is the I am that I am mantra. Now, we haven't practiced it in meditation because we're doing the awareness-centered practice. But we have practiced it in that daily life to help shift attention from being, you know, engrossed in the mind to being more aware of silence, more aware of awareness, more aware of the moment. So far we're 3 for 3. The fourth one that he said he found in his research was mindfulness-based practices. He says contemplative and meditative techniques for focusing on the present moment in a non-reactive way. Generally, the goal is to obtain a stable, non-judgmental awareness of arising thoughts, emotions, sensations, and I would also include perceptions, even though he didn't. And what we really did that's aligned with this was the Loving All Method. Right, the Loving All Method is paying attention to ourselves and learning to be non-reactive. Remember, and you may remember that if you can love it, love it. But if you can't love it, accept it as it is. And if you feel like you can't even accept it as it is, emotionally allow it, which is very similar to rest, accept, and trust. And in fact, rest, accept, and trust is another practice that we looked at that is this mindfulness-based practice. So again, we definitely practice living in a non-reactive way, learning how to just be with whatever is, accept it as it is, love it as it is. So we're 4 for 4 so far. We have all of this included in our curriculums. Now the last one, I honestly think we haven't emphasized. So this might be something, now that you guys are pretty skilled or pretty used to these first four and they're a part of your life, maybe if you haven't got this one going, you can add this next one. So the fifth practice is, he called it noting-based practices. This is awareness of and mental labeling of ongoing experience. He says noting can be done silently or aloud. Both internal, you note the thoughts, emotions, and sensations, or external events, the perceptions, can be noted. Traditionally, an individual practice in recent years form that social noting has become popular and involves, and sometimes involves noting out loud with one or more. So the way noting would work is, I'm going to just use a use Tony's example plus my imagination because I wasn't in Tony's body. But, you know, so the mother-in-law says something about, you know, you're cutting me out of your life. You're ignoring me. You don't care about me. You don't make room for me, all that. And what I start to feel arising in me is defensiveness. So quietly within myself, I would note, I feel attacked. I note, I see defensiveness. I note that I am aware of my desire to let this pass by, right? You just kind of note what you notice. And you can see how noting what you notice will help you to stay in the watching. Can you see that? Rather than getting caught up. And that is not something that we have emphasized. I have done it before, but it's not something that I have emphasized in the past. So I just kind of want to add that as another possible practice. And those are the only five practices that he listed as another possible practice that will help you. I would say especially in what you might consider stressful or challenging or trying situations, right? Note your thoughts. Note your emotions. Now, probably the way we did do this, it just occurred to me, is in the beginning journaling. I used to ask you to write out everything your mind believed about something. That would be a type of noting, right? You're noting everything your mind is saying about a particular situation. Does anybody have any questions about noting or any comments they want to make about this list of what he calls proven methods? He calls these the proven methods. Okay, not hearing anything, so I'll move on. But I wanted to share those with you. And, of course, if you want to hear more this Sunday night, which is what, June 16th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, come and listen to the interview with Dr. Jeffrey Martin. Okay, the next thing that I have that I can share with you is completely optional. I'll leave it up to you. Last Wednesday night, in my Nisargadatta I Am That teaching, I played a 10-minute audio by Roger Castillo about use of the mantra to stop thought. Interestingly, several people that heard it said that was just what they needed right now. Thank you very much, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not certain if everyone heard it. I'm not certain if everyone listens to the Nisargadatta teaching. And even some who did may want to hear it again. So my question is, would you guys like to hear that audio from Roger Castillo? Because I could play that right now. Okay, all right. So I will, let me pull that up first and then I'll share my screen. It's easier if I get it up on the screen first. So I have it up on the screen. So now let me come back and share my screen with you guys so that you can listen to this.
Abide in I am means when awareness recognizes that there's this obsessive thinking, a thought could arise, and the thought is I am, which becomes the bookend to that obsessive thinking. Our contentment and our peace is not to be found in outcomes, but rather in our being, in what we are at our core. And this is not an intellectual belief. We can test this out for ourselves. We can start moving back to the heart more regularly. So Nisargadatta's teaching would suggest that we abide in I am. His guru suggested this to Nisargadatta, abide in I am. Nisargadatta trusted him. And 3 years later, as the story goes, there was self-realization. So what exactly does abide in I am mean? What it means is that there is this field of being that exists prior to thinking, a field of being that we're not particularly familiar with, because for our whole life we have lived as the thinker, as the doer, trying to control life through thought, imagining the future and having expectations about it, remembering the past and having regrets, and complaining in the present moment. looking at things and judging them as good or bad, judging them as in line with how we think life should be or out of line with how we think life should be, all based on the ingrained beliefs of who we are and what we need in order to be complete. So for a large proportion of the population, there's no idea that there is any other way of being in life, no experiential reference point of a resting in the heart, no experiential reference point of functioning from outside the continuous, incessant, obsessive stream of thinking. And so abide in I am is suggesting that there is this field, and that thinking about the past and the future with expectations and feeling guilt and blame is what keeps us outside of that field. And so all of the concepts I've been speaking about tonight are concepts that say our suffering is basically a feeling in the body that at the base of it comes from a belief about ourself being the doer and the other being the doer, and me needing life to be pleasure, pleasure, pleasure in order for me to be happy and complete. So it's pointing to this obsessive thinking and saying none of it is true. In fact, all of it is our suffering. And so abide in I am means dropping out of that thinking into being. And this is not something that we do, but rather it's a happening once there is this realization that all of this thinking is actually taking us away from where we want to be. We start off with this obsessive thinking because deep down we think it's good for us. Deep down we think it's going to take us to what we need. Deep down we think we might control life and we might actually get happiness through pleasure. Now we can start to see that we've been doing this for long enough and that that thinking actually is the suffering. So this now is part of the body's up-to-date conditioning, this concept. And abide in I am means when awareness recognizes that there's this obsessive thinking, a thought could arise, and the thought is I am, which becomes the bookend to that obsessive thinking. So it's, you know, why didn't I do this? I should have done that in order to achieve that result, and that person should have helped me, blah, 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 blah. And then there's a recognition that that's what's happening. And the thought, I am, arises. And the I am can cut off that thinking. And it cuts off the thinking because now we realize that there's no point in this thinking. So we're happy for it to just stop midstream. And so I am can drop us into being. And what we'll find is it might only drop us into being for a second. And before we know it, we're back into thinking again about why didn't I do this and why didn't that person do this and I need this to be the outcome and it's not looking like it's going to happen. And 10 minutes can go past where this thinking, this obsessive thinking has happened before awareness lands on it again. It says, oh, there it goes again. And then the thought, I am, arises. I am, full stop. And at the end of the full stop, there's a dropping into being. Maybe only for a second again, before the thinking starts again. But that doesn't matter that we only drop in for a second. What can happen is we can find ourselves doing this 10 or 15 times in a day, not as a practice so much, but rather when awareness lands on the obsessive thinking, the thought I am, which is the bookend to that obsessive thinking, the end, the cut, that thought arises automatically. And we can carry on our day as we're doing this. We do carry on our day. And the thinking will come back, and that's okay. And then the thought, I am, cuts it off. And each time we drop down into the heart. What I mean by dropping down into the heart is that the center of consciousness resides up in the head because of all the thinking. But its home is actually the chest and the heart. So when the thought I am arises, it cuts off thinking. And if we can imagine that all of a sudden the center of consciousness is dropped into the chest area, and that life is being seen not from the head but from the chest, the reason it's in the chest, in the heart, is that that's the place where impersonal consciousness links into the human being and functions through the human being as personal consciousness. So that's the junction box. The heart is the junction box for impersonal consciousness connecting to the body and flowing through the body as personal consciousness. And so in the heart resides the sense of being, the sense of I am.
So as he was speaking, you know, of course, this is my third time hearing that, but as he was speaking, since we just read quotes, 405, 406, and 407, and I asked, how can we live these quotes? I realized he was kind of answering that question too, right? You know, he was answering the question that one way that we live these quotes, again, to review the quotes, be not deluded. Abandon false perception. When the mind abandons the movement of thought, then the appearance of the world illusion ceases. You know, then you can behold the truth. When you're caught up in your own conditioning, whatever you see, you think it's real and you get deluded. You know, what he's really talking about is when the mind is chatting, and of course we're seeing the world through that mind, and awareness becomes aware of the talking, the chatting that's going on in the mind. You know, we say the mantra, and he's using the mantra I am, but we could say I am that I am, whichever we prefer. I am. And then I love it how he says full stop. You just pause. You drop into the heart, into the intuition, or into the inner focus. You know, again, just enough inner focus. We're talking about a time when maybe you need to be outward. But you drop into that inner attention. And, you know, this is also a time when you could shift back into the inner Ramana practice. You know, if you're in a conversation with someone and you realize the mind is, you know, like the mother-in-law, and the mind is going on and on and on with all these defensive thoughts, right? You could say to yourself, I am, or I am that I am. Full stop. Pause. And then ask, how am I to see this? Right? What am I to do now? What am I to think, right? All of these practices are practices that we've learned throughout gentle healing. You know, they're not new. The only thing that I mentioned that might be somewhat new is the noting, right? That maybe we haven't really talked about that. But all of these practices we're very, very familiar with, but it's always nice. I think we all know this, to have reminders of these practices. Because these practices are how we live, quotes 405, 406, and 407. You know, it's basically this. We have two choices. One choice is just to keep on believing our minds, keep on believing our conditioning, keep on believing our perception. And then the other choice is to start paying attention inwardly. Paying attention to awareness and paying attention to intuition. And we wouldn't be here if we didn't already realize that external attention and that attention on the mind is what's causing all of our problems, all of our suffering, and that it really doesn't make sense anymore. So each and every one of us is here because we really want to learn that internal focus. We want to live from that internal focus, and we want to awaken to the truth. I remember, I think it was in a Ramana, but I remember a time when, you know, my inner wisdom said to me, you have everything you need. You know, it's like for a while when you're listening to inner wisdom keeps giving you tools, you know, try this, try this, try this. But then there comes a point where it's almost like inner wisdom says, hey, my pockets are empty. I've given you everything. Now you just need to do it. And the interesting thing about these practices is they aren't that hard. The only thing that makes it seem hard is we're not in that habit. Right? We're still in the habit of looking outward, believing our thoughts, believing our perceptions, you know, just acting from our thoughts and our perceptions. I love the demonstration that Tony shared with us, because you know, that's really where we want to be. I mean, she had to have been centered inward to make that choice, to notice the defensiveness, to realize she didn't want to go with the defensiveness, right? She had to be inward focused. If she hadn't been, she would have just responded, you know, saying everything the mind wanted her to say, defend herself. And probably what would have happened is the mother-in-law would have felt attacked. And this would have resulted in a more difficult relationship. Tony, were you just silent? Were you just listening? You didn't really comment. Did you say anything?
For the majority of the conversation, I did just listen to her. And then the thought came into the mind, well, she's going to interpret your not saying anything as negative also. So I just let that thought go and just really did tune into inner wisdom in the silence and just be very authentic in how I was being in that moment. And it was just beautiful, really. I just don't know how to say it, because I felt like there was a healing going on inside of me that sort of permeated out into the space that we were both in. So
beautiful. I think it's a beautiful way of saying it. My goodness, that was perfect. Yeah. So. And I love the way she said, "I was just, you know, being authentic." Authentic meaning to her true self, right? Authentic to her true self. Authentic to her true desire, right? It's funny. I've heard spiritual people in the past say things like, well, if I'm angry at the mother-in-law and I don't, you know, tell her what I'm thinking, then I'm not being authentic. That's not true. That would be authentic to the ego, right? What Tony did was authentic, right? To the true self. And that's who we want to be authentic to, right? Not to the ego, but to the true self. So we have several tools. We've looked at these things that I'm pointing my phone because I was reading the Jeffrey Martin stuff off my phone. We looked at these things that Jeffrey Martin said, the practices, and again, four out of the five we're all very familiar with. We listened again to Roger Castillo talk about how to use the mantra, which we're all familiar with because we learned that in the teachings of Inner Ramana. And all of these things. That's how we live quotes 405, 406, and 407. So are there any comments or questions or anything? All right, good. Then let's see what else I have here. I just have something that I'll read to you. I made a note of it that came from Carla's journal. Carla wrote, I just thought this was beautiful the way she worded it. She says, "My brain is constantly spinning, making new material. The personal yards and yards of material are cut specifically to my size and shape and then sewn in rapid order. I wear garment upon garment, forgetting that I am already clothed in her silence." I'll read it again. I just think it's beautiful. It gives me chills. Carla can sometimes, it's kind of funny reading her journal because she can be very funny and she can be very poetic. It's a lot of fun. So let me read this one again. This one to me was poetic, obviously. "My brain is constantly spinning, making new material. The personalized yards and yards of material are cut specifically to my size and shape and then sewn in rapid order. I wear garment upon garment, forgetting that I am already clothed in her silence. So I just wanted to share that with you because I thought that was really beautiful. And we all, you know, we all experience that, right? The mind spinning out these new stories. We believe these stories, right? And forgetting the silence. One of the things that Roger Castillo talked about in the audio that we listened to, I don't remember the exact words, but the idea that the true self is beyond the false self. That the awareness is beyond the mind. And, you know, it's interesting today when we were in retreat, I'm going to talk about Mark right in front of him because he's here. When we were in retreat today, I had people contemplating out loud some quotes. And as he was contemplating out loud, just this aha hit him. And it wasn't anything he hadn't heard before, I know, because I talk about it all the time. But you could see it dawn on him. That the true self is beyond the false self. Or in the quote he was contemplating called it, the pure mind is beyond the impure mind. And he suddenly realized the impure mind can just keep spinning. You know, it can just keep having thoughts. It can keep being impure. I just have to realize that I'm the pure mind that's the observer of that. Right? Stay with the pure mind. And this is what Roger Castillo talked about as well. In that particular audio that we listen to. We don't need to manipulate this mind up front. We just need to remember what we are, right? We're not the mind. And the mind can spin. If we know we're not the mind, however, we won't be acting on it. You see, that's the difference. When you act on it, it's because you're believing it. You know, so if Tony was to get all defensive with the mother-in-law, it's because she's believing the spinning. When the spinning is happening, and Tony told us, her mind was telling her, you know, how to defend herself and how to, you know, right? Her mind was spinning, but she was able to hang back and be the observer of that without being the believer of that. Because the pure mind is beyond the impure mind. The true self is beyond the false self. Right? So we just want to remember who we are and abide as ourself. So that's all again based on what Carla wrote about the yards and yards of material and putting on the different costumes, believing the different stories and forgetting that I'm already clothed in, she uses the term, her silence. Already clothed in awareness. Let me see. I have a couple other notes here. Let me log into the forum. And I'm going to share my screen again. I'm getting hungry. I can smell my mother cooking in the other room. It's making me hungrier and hungrier. All right. So, we're looking for Manuela. And it looks like I want number 381. Oh, right here on top, that's easy. All this creation takes place only as a dream. This creation is not real. It merely appears to be so. Manuela, actually I think I just want to skip right down here. She says, today was fascinating because everyone who hated me 2 weeks ago so lovely and wonderful and warm today as I walked into work. And then, ha, 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 ha. She says, another trick. My happiness was there before I arrived to work. So even though mind was trying to attribute the pleasant happiness to everybody being nice and welcoming and wanting chats. I knew it was just the other half of the cycle of the valleys and mountain peaks. I checked in and stayed with awareness as the situation unfolded and I greeted everyone. It's so funny how much the world changes every day. Am I the person who they all avoided and didn't want to be around 2 weeks ago? Or am I the person who they saw and liked and wanted to chat to today? Ha 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 ha. Don't believe any of it. Stay with the real. Ego is only deeply concerned with itself. Consciousness will show you who to talk to and will do the actioning and talking for you. You stay as awareness. Consciousness is doing this in every moment, as in what life itself gives you to live right now, situation, experience, feelings, and thoughts. And of course, one reason I wanted to pick this is, sometimes we do remember to stay within, just pay attention to awareness in the difficult times, like when everybody's hating us. But then on the easier times, when everybody is liking us, we forget. You know, that happens a lot. We forget. And so what I thought was wonderful about this particular journal entry is that she noticed that as an ego trick. She says, I'm not the one they hated and I'm not the one they like, right? I'm not either one. I'm not happy because they like me. Just stay with awareness, stay with awareness, stay with the truth. So thank you very much, Manuela, for sharing that story. That's another good story. Again, it's showing the living of quotes 405, 406, and 407. Now I can't see you guys, but does anybody have anything they want to say? If so, just speak up. Now, it looks like I have two more here. Yeah, Let's see if I can.
Make a comment real quick.
Yes, go ahead, JY. Move on to the next one. You go right ahead.
Just that I'm glad that somebody realized that the traps can also be positive things, to get you to identify with thought through the pleasant stuff, And that's easy to overlook. That's a common trap that she caught. That's actually, I think, kind of rare. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm going to look at Nancy, number 390. Let's see. She says, nothing in this world is truly enduring, yet we hang on to things as if they will or must endure. A clear example of this is the many ways we hang on to our youth, fearing the inevitable, which is death. We also suffer when we lose a loved one. On a deeper level, this unrelenting desire for the eternal is really a knowing of its existence, or it wouldn't be hardwired in us. What is eternal is real and does exist, but it cannot be found in the world. We seek for it in the world because we are mesmerized by the world illusion and are unable to see beyond it. And I think we can all identify with wanting things to be enduring, wanting certain things to stay as they are. And I thought this was wonderful how she points out that this desire, it's really just kind of like a distorted miracle principle in A Course in Miracles. We do seek the enduring, but we're seeking it in the wrong place. We're seeking it in the world. We know at a deeper level that there must be something that's enduring. And what we want to remember is to turn around and look in the right direction, right? So I really appreciated that. And I have one more thing I want to share, so I'm going to go look for it. Does anybody want to comment on this as I am moving? Okay, so I'm going to Julietta. right here. I'm going to start it with this guidance that she asked Holy Spirit after contemplating quotes 397 to 400. She said, Holy Spirit, how would you have me put these purposes into practice? And the response was, just keep reading the quotes each day, contemplating them, and letting them sink in. Don't try to grasp for these things intellectually. Instead, have an attitude of curiosity, wonder, and openness. Bit by bit, I'm readying you for the compelling evidence of direct experience. And I want to highlight this sentence. Bit by bit, I am readying you for the compelling evidence of direct experience. For now, continue to give me your willingness and obedience as much as you can. Take courage from what happened with your friend and her son and Santa Claus. So I want to read that story to you. She says, I met my friend's son again recently. He's 21 now, delightful, and via his study of physics knows that many things in the material world are not as we have long thought. I remember her telling me that when he was about 8, he came to her and asked her if Santy was real or not. She looked at him and said in a gentle voice, oh, Sam. And before she could say more, he ran off in tears. She found him sobbing in his bedroom later and ended up saying, Sam, I think you misunderstood. Of course Santy's real. He brightened up and said, I knew it, Mom. My friend and I had a little chuckle over it, but it gives me comfort now as I see that these days it doesn't trouble him at all to know that Santa Claus is not real. He grew out of the need to believe in him, and it fell away naturally. It gives me confidence to think that while it upsets me now to think lots of things I think are real are not, including my idea of a father figure God, one day it won't trouble me at all. So I thought this was really wonderful. I thought it was wonderful that, you know, her inner guidance was saying bit by bit, I am readying you for, and I love this, the compelling evidence of direct experience. Right, when you are ready for that compelling evidence of a direct experience of truth, you will know it. But then said, you know, take comfort in this story. And in this story, we have someone who's at one point not ready to let go of Santa, and so is allowed to hold on to Santa. And then later, of course, becomes very ready. And as she points out, at 21 years old, it would never occur to him to be upset that there's no Santa. And the point there is we are being ready to come to the point where it would never occur to us to be upset that there is no world. It would never occur to us to be upset that we aren't this person, right? So right now, those ideas may still be upsetting, but we're still like this young boy who's not quite yet ready to let go of Santa Claus. But through our daily contemplation, we are being readied. So I wanted to share that with you. And I have gone over for a few minutes, so thank you, Don, for your patience. And her workday is supposed to end now 4 minutes ago. And everybody, have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you for this again in a week.